from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Toe tap. And he delivers with a single in the left. The throw coming home. Batted tending. Let's go. What a throw from left.
Doesn't get any better looking than this as Andrew Benintendi. Charging the ball aggressively, putting it right on the money, and cutting down one of baseball's fastest runners.
Here's Benintendi at the dish, and he sends this one out to right, going back is Suzuki at the wall, and Benintendi first in the field, now at the plate.
Well, Andrew makes one of the best throws of his career and then follows it up with a towering fly ball to right field that didn't come down. So now it's a two-run game as the Sox are battling their way back into this. And they got a big spark defensively from Corey Lee and Andrew Benintendi. And now Benintendi offensively gets them closer.
It is Hit and Run with you on a Sunday morning. Matt Spiegel talking about baseball in our unique two-team town. And there's really, there's nothing like Cubs and Sox. Good moment last night during the Fox broadcast, the national broadcast, as A.J. Pierzynski and Jameson Taillon were talking about Cubs and Sox. Maybe we'll bring that some of that to you a little bit later on. But, you know, A.J. was saying there's nothing like it when these two teams are good. And he's right. But even when the two teams are not good, and they're where they are in different spots, but still, you know, both under 500, Friday especially seemed to be absolutely electric. Let's ask our friend Steve Stone, who joins us right now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Steve, welcome in. How are you, sir?
Going pretty well this morning. Got a couple of days off. Yesterday was another tight game between these two teams. I was there for the Friday night game, and there was a certain amount of electricity around the ballpark, which I believe that the Sox and their fandom would love to get used to, but to do that, the team's got to get a bit better before you can look forward to crowds with that much energy and that plentiful.
I did think that Friday was a great baseball game. Like it felt like the Sox players were rising to the moment. It had like interesting energy with Grady Sizemore's first game, his first pitching change. He goes out to get his ace down 6-0. That's a tough hand you're dealt there. But they clawed all the way back, and I wonder, you know, there's some proud players who I felt like showed up real hard.
Well, I do believe that. When you're having the kind of year the Sox are having, you look for little victories here and there, and you get a chance to play a team that's either a great rival, a crosstown rival in this case, a divisional rival if they you know, can hook up with the Guardians or the Twins going forward. I think you look at those as games you would love to bear down a little bit and win those games. You're not going to be able to salvage this particular year. You're sitting there at 28-91, realizing that if 41 games out, there's a real good chance you're not going to make the playoffs. So you look for other things to make your season. Certainly there's individual accomplishments, but more than that, an accomplishment as a team is beating teams you really enjoy beating, and you would have to say for the Sox, the Cubs fall into that category.
Can you clarify something from Friday? I think you did it on Twitter, but let's go ahead and do it for the listeners. Chris Getz did not have his back to you, right? I've been in that spot where a guy is in the middle and the camera angle makes it look like he's ignoring you. That was not the case, correct, Steve?
No, that wasn't the case. Chris and I get along very well. There was no slight intended. And it was just a question of it's a shot. That's designed for two people, can accommodate three people, but when that happens, usually the person in the middle, whoever that is, will have his back to the person to his right, which is usually me. So the first person you see is John, whoever we're interviewing is in the middle, and then there's me, and occasionally it comes up a situation like that. But no, there was no snub intended. Chris and I get along fine, and again, it was more a camera than anything else.
Steve, how would you advise Chris? You know, and maybe you've had a chance to directly, but how would you advise him in terms of, like, you know, the two or three most important things that he ought to be thinking about to help this organization turn the baseball part around?
Well, I think he started out doing a lot of good things, and that was bringing in more front office talent. And I think that's how this starts, because it's the people in the front office that are going to get you the players that you see on the field. And so I don't think it's a question of advising Chris, because I think he's been around baseball front offices long enough to understand exactly what you have to do. And I'm not in on those meetings and not privy to those. But if I were to look at it, some of the things that I would advise, and I think that some of the things that they've already addressed, number one, you have to sit back and figure out what you want White Sox baseball to be. And then you have to implement that throughout your system. So you start when you get a player into your system, when you draft a player or sign a player as a free agent or go outside this country to bring in talent to your organization. And then you figure out what you want White Sox baseball to look like. And from the time that this guy puts on a uniform in the White Sox organization, you are explaining to him how you want this system to work. Excuse me, how you want the system to work and exactly what you want to implement. And then you plan to implement this throughout the system so that there's one thing being taught from the time you start with the White Sox to the time you get to the major leagues. And I think we've seen something, Speaks, that I don't know if a lot of people are paying attention to exactly. When White Sox fans say to me, is there any hope for the future? I mean, what's going to happen with this team? How long do we have to languish in obscurity, as it were, before things start to look a little bit better? So let's look at the way you have to build things, and that's fundamentally through your minor league system. And a few years back, and I'm talking about preseason of 2022, this organization was rated 30th as far as talent is concerned in the minor leagues. And then just a short time later in 2023 preseason, they were 26th. This year, entering this season, they were 20th. And right now, from people that I talk to and looking at various rating systems, overall, the White Sox are considered eighth best in the major leagues, which is a very quick climb from the bottom of the barrel to the top 10. And I think that's where the hope lies. And that's where Project Birmingham came in, where you wanted to make things happen at Double A. And guess what? Birmingham this year got to the playoffs. There's a lot more talent down there than there's been. And that's originally what Chris Getz decided to deal with. And he brought in Paul Janisch because of that. And that's one of the player development people that is going to help the Sox get stronger. And the only way to do it is through player development, because number one, it's cheaper, because you don't have to go out and buy very expensive free agents. You're developing your own. And I think what we're seeing for the Sox is the pitching has developed a little more quickly than the hitting, because I think when you look at some of the young arms and see what's happening, young arms in the major leagues, young arms in the minor leagues, you realize that there is an improvement. It's just not going to happen overnight.
Yeah, no, there is an improvement, and that is a great currency to have. And then you could theoretically deal from that strength. But, yeah, so does there need to be a hire of somebody who is in charge of hitting, whether it's a director of hitting or a Brian Bannister for the hitters, that kind of thing?
No, you know, you bring up a good point. And you look at how it unfolded to this point, and you realize that when you start to make some radical changes, and they happen in August, you're not going to be able to implement those changes as quickly as you would like. And so that's one of the reasons why Chris decided that he's not going to make that consequential hire. And the next hire, bear in mind, is Chris gets his first hire, which is consequential because most GMs get two hires. So you might want to make sure that first one is pretty good. The second one has to be excellent. The first one doesn't work out. But I think they're going to talk to a lot of people from a lot of different organizations and get a feel for exactly what they want. And this is the thing that has to happen first. Before you hire a manager, you have to figure out, if you're a front office guy, if you're Josh Barfield or Jin Wong or any of the assistants to the GM, or you're talking about player development people, and you bring up a good point with Bannister and with a hitting guy coming in. I think one of the guys they brought up from the minor leagues is a guy by the name of Mike Gellinger. And Gellinger, for years, has been in the White Sox organization, and he was the guy that Paul Konerko went to when he had a swing problem. And if Paul, who's as analytical a guy and as insightful a guy and as knowledgeable a guy about hitting as anybody I've ever talked to, when he endorses somebody, I got to figure they're pretty good. So I think that's one of the steps that the Sox are taking. And I think there's a number of others, but they're subtle changes. I mean, look, you go out, you're the Dodgers, you sign Ohtani. That's a radical $700 million change, and it's almost instantaneous. But that's not how this works, because there was one team that could have afforded him, the team that did. And the other teams have to go about building it the old-fashioned way, which is a sound foundation from their minor leagues building up to the occasional free agent acquisition in the major leagues.
Yeah, Mike Gellinger, the Palatine native at age 60, back to the big club. He was kind of the de facto assistant hitting coach to Greg Walker, and definitely a guy who was valued by Konerko and other members of that 2005 team. We're here with Steve Stone on 670 The Score. Stoney, what can you tell listeners or tell me about your future? You are one of the best ever to do what you do, and seemingly an annual finalist for the Ford Frick Award, and well deserved. And it's you know, you're someone who's been a very important part of a lot of Sox fans' lives, and they're wondering if they're going to be able to count on that as part of the booth and their Sox fan life next year and beyond.
Well, what I said was, at the time when I was asked directly about that, what I said was, you just don't want to make decisions before you really have to. But there's a couple things come into play. Number one, I still really love this game. And on a daily basis, you can be struggling. You can have the kind of year the Sox have had. And then all of a sudden, Friday night pops up. And you sit back, you look at the crowd. You look at the intensity of the fans of both sides of town. Now, we realized that that game meant a whole lot more for the Cubs than it did for the Sox and their fans. However, the Sox and their fans really get up for Cub games. And that game produced one of the best played games with some of the more interesting plays that I've seen. And it's those kind of moments that keep me coming back, because you're looking at artistry sometimes. You're looking at what appears to be Little League baseball at sometimes. When it all comes together, and you see things happen like that play Benintendi throwing out Pete Crow Armstrong at the plate, it was exquisite. And the same thing with Corey Lee making a great throw on a pop time to second base to cut down a would-be base stealer. You see those things happen, and you say, you know what? This is how the game should be played. Now let's see how we can go about having more games like that than games that we've seen a lot this year. So as far as me coming back, I'll make the decision later in the year. Again, I still love baseball. The White Sox personnel have intimated that they would like to have me back, so that certainly is a good portion of the equation, because if that wasn't on the table, then quite obviously there wouldn't be any coming back. But I'll look at it, and I'll see what happens going forward. But again, it's a beautiful game, and occasionally when you have those games like Friday night, when there's over 38,000 people in the ballpark, where there's electricity that was palpable, when you just can get involved in every little nuance of the game of baseball, which is very much like the game of chess. On the surface, it's rudimentary, and then you go down and you peel off the layers and you can see some of the most intricate strategy that you'd ever see in your life. And again, when it all comes together, it is beautiful. And so we'll see what happens as we move along in this year, and then I'll make my decision.
I mean, that's wonderful stuff. You know, I agree and feel you on the beauty of the game, and how you never know which night you're going to get something wonderful. When it's well played. I have to ask how your partnership is going with John, and how the booth is feeling, and if that is a factor in the way it all has felt, ups and downs this year.
Well, there's no doubt that if you were going to pick a time to try to assimilate into a new organization and represent a new city, a city you haven't been to before, and kind of make the transition from a national broadcast to a local broadcast, which is a completely different entity, by the way, this wouldn't be the year that John Schriffen would have picked to come into a new organization with a new city and see what's happening with the 28-91 Sox. But you don't get to pick and choose all the time exactly what is going to happen when you do make your decision. And I think John is adjusting to a new city in a very tough year for the ball club that he's calling. And I think he's made great strides from the beginning until now. And I look forward to working with him, certainly the rest of this year and on through. He has a multi-year contract, and I feel like he's going to be here. And I think, again, if he can make the improvement from this year to next, as he's made from the beginning of this season until now, I think he's going to be fine. It hasn't been smooth. It's been very difficult for a lot of different people in a lot of different areas, and John is one of those people.
It's an interesting role that you guys play. I was talking to somebody the other day who referred to the jobs that you guys have as, you know, faces of the organization. Faces of the organization, because we hear from the manager a lot, but you guys are the ones kind of shepherding, and obviously the radio does too, but in terms of visually and just kind of the whole thing, you guys are the ones kind of shepherding people through a very awkward year. There's a lot of responsibility there, isn't there, in that role?
Well, yeah, certainly, you know, it helps to have a whole lot of experience when you go through something like this, and that's because you've seen a semblance of this year many times. I mean, with 55 years in professional baseball, as I have, I've seen a lot of really bad teams. I've seen a lot of really good teams. I played on some very bad teams and played on some very good teams. And so when you get this experience, although this is never pleasant, you realize that you can get through it. But the one thing that you have to bear in mind is people who tune in on a given day are tuning in to see a product that you're representing, and you owe them to give as much energy as you possibly can on a daily basis. And that means not going through the motions at any time. And look, during most of my professional career as a player, I wasn't good enough to go through the motions because I would have been washed out of the league. And I took the same type of aggressive attitude and enthusiasm when I went into the booth. And so knowing that I have a responsibility to our fans to give them the best product that I can give them on a daily basis, that's what you do. You go out there and realize that today's a brand new day. You don't have yesterday. You're not going to have tomorrow. You take care of today. And that's one of the things that I've learned over these years, is that man or woman or that young child, either male or female, when they're tuning in, they're tuning in to see the best I can give them. And, you know, as far as the players are concerned, most of these guys are giving you every ounce of what they have on a daily basis.
Stoney, you missed a decent game last night, but really you also missed two Jamokes jumping out of the outfield stands and ending up on the field with different results. We're going to talk about that with the listeners next and figure out what the hell those people were thinking. Maybe even invite them to call so they can be chastised on live radio. What the hell? But nice to talk to you, sir. Appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Steve, have a good rest of the show, and we'll talk down the road.
All right, you got it. Steve Stone right there on 670 The Score. A texter says, Stoney has seen more bad baseball than anyone between the Cubs and all those bad years and the White Sox. Yeah, that's a lot of bad baseball that Steve has had to watch and talk through. But a lot of good baseball, too. It makes the good stuff that much more worthwhile. All right, I want to hear from you if you were at the game last night, or if you have now perused all the videos that are out there. Let's talk about those two Jamokes who jumped onto the field and did what they did with very different results. And what are we supposed to do with them? You know, we don't want to draw attention to it, because then they'll do it again, right? But I kind of want to draw attention to what happened to one of them. I really do. So we'll do that. And I want to hear from you who are at the game about that situation and anything else you want, Cubs and Sox. Phone lines back open for the rest of the hour and most of the rest of the show, as a matter of fact, at 312-644-6767.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
This guy can't walk. They got to bring the card on to get him off the field.
So here comes the cart with the medical attention to get the guy off the track. where he tried to go out and follow his buddy onto the field and run around, and instead he just hurt himself.
You know what's going on with that last inning with something going on in center field?
I think some fans maybe got a little overexcited. Yeah, maybe. That's what I think happened.
Yeah, they got a little overexcited, Craig. It speaks with you on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. So I was on Fox TV on Channel 32, WFLD, last night with Tina Wen doing some post-game after Cubs and Sox. We did a lot of Caleb. Did a lot of Caleb Williams, folks. Because it was pretty damn exciting yesterday. Talk to you tomorrow about that. Rami Makhlouf will be here at noon. And Rami, I'm sure, will talk a bunch, Caleb. Bunch of Bears with you after Hit and Run. Rami was also there last night, and he sent out a tweet with the video from his perspective in the 500 section right behind the plate of one of the people that jumped out there. So anyway, I'm on set there in the ninth inning at Fox waiting to do TV, and the game is on, but there's no sound. I had no idea what was happening. PCA, like, steps in. And they go away. There's no game action. I see Hap comes over and he's talking to Pete. I see Neris taking some warm-up pitches. I had no idea what was happening. I don't find out till later. Two fans jumped out. And if you you can see on Rami's video that one of them landed, ran around like crazy, and broke contain. Really impressive stuff. Had a little Tariq Cohen in him as a returner, right? Like, he avoided a lot of people and deeks the security once, and then he goes over and he's there on the warning track, and he slows down. Everybody comes to get him, and then he takes off again. Really impressive stuff. Of course, he's on a baseball field with nowhere to go, so they eventually catch him. Did you see the guy two nights ago, by the way, who tried to jump over a wall and overestimated his vertical leap quite a bit? He did a full body plant.
It was more of a face plant.
Oh, my God. Full body plant against the outfield walls. It was amazing. And so you've got that. The second person, okay, the second person that jumped down, jumped down from the outfield onto the warning track and broke his leg. Immediately landed and broke his leg. And he was just like out there limping around. Is there anything more stupid and helpless than a complete and utter jamoke who has decided to go onto a baseball field for his brief 30 seconds of fame and breaks his leg and then needs help? They took the injury cart out there. They took the injury cart out there to get him. And as they were putting him on the cart, oh, your poor leg, they also zip-tied his arms together. Because screw you, pal. You're going to jail. You're going to the pokey. Yeah, you got a broken leg. We don't really care. I don't think that he had a very warm touch from the security people. I don't think they really, you know, worried too much about his comfort. Jesse Rogers tweeted that they wheeled the guy by Jesse, and apparently Sahadev Sharma as well, because Sahadev tweeted about it. They wheeled the guy by the media on their way to take him to the first aid room. The right leg was wrapped up. Jesse was guessing the 60-day injured list for the guy, that maybe he's going to be good for spring training. We don't know. But Sahadev said it was absolutely the funniest sight of the night. That the best and funniest sight of the night was Jesse asking this dude, WTF happened, as he's being wheeled by with his hands zip tied and his leg in an air cast. Just amazing visuals. Thank you to our media for doing God's work. I want to hear from you if you saw these idiots. If you saw these two idiots, I want to hear from you. What should we do to these people? Should I not even be talking about them? They don't show them. Is that the right thing to do? Jason Benetti had a moment the other night. Oh, yeah, it was his guy who did that, who jumped into the wall. Benetti was talking about him and absolutely blasted him. It was hilarious and entertaining because he's Benetti. But, like, should we? It, does it make sense to not show them? Does it make sense to talk about them? Should we not talk about them? I want them to be embarrassed. I've decided that they should be embarrassed. I think we should show them if they're getting their ass kicked. Maybe we should, as a television entity, as a television industry, roll tape on this, you know, somehow roll tape with one of your cameras. And then if they are suitably embarrassed or hurt or beaten down, then you do show that on the air. Just to remind people not to do this. Or is our everybody's a cameraman social media society getting the job done? I want to know what you think. 312-644-6767. This is Rick and Roselle on The Score. Good morning, Rick. How are you?
I am pretty good. How about yourself?
Very good. Thank you.
Well, I'm a 70-year-old baseball fan. I go to a lot of games both sides of town.
Okay.
And I've seen this before in person, and I really don't think you should talk about it because it encourages more people to do it. And these guys are selfish. They delayed the players. They delayed the fans, and they love the attention.
Mm-hmm. So we shouldn't show them and shouldn't talk about them at all. We should just pretend they don't exist, do that kind of thing?
Well, I guess you got to mention it a little bit, but... I mean, it was so stupid. The guy jumps down and breaks his leg, and the other guy, I mean, it was funny. He was dodging those guys, but he was obviously younger than those security guys.
Yeah.
Well, it was kind of funny, but, you know, it's selfish. They delay everybody.
Yeah, no, absolutely they do. You know, I mentioned that the first guy had some Tariq Cohen in him as a returner. The second guy had some Tariq Cohen in him as he was getting hurt, And trying to, you know, return to the NFL. So they both had some Tariq Cohen in them, just different times of it. Yes, texture says he broke his leg. Ha ha, 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 laughing on the floor. Ha, 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 ha. Another texture. You think these guys can be embarrassed? See, that's the thing. That's the thing. You can't fix stupid, says another texture. By all means, talk about them. The talking about them or showing them is, you know, they're going to stay stupid. There's another saying, no, don't talk about them. Don't. I think we have to. I think we have to talk about them. I think we have to show them, and we have to embarrass them. It's funny, all this talk about not paying attention reminds me, my brother used to have a parrot, had an African gray parrot named Spinoza, an absolutely beautiful bird. Those birds live a long time. The bird is still alive, as a matter of fact. Spinoza, I believe, is at the Lincoln Park Zoo. You know, the associate producer is looking at me. Yeah, Ruben, I think we should go visit Spinoza. If he's still alive, we should go see Spinoza. I used to be able to hang out with that bird, and he was awesome. Bird, like, learned to mimic the voicemail machine. The answering machine. Listen to me. He learned to mimic the answering machine. Hello? Hello? You know, it was hilarious. And he learned to do all kinds of stuff. But every once in a while, he would let out an enormous shriek, just like the loudest, most horrifying shriek ever. And my instructions from my brother were to not look at the bird when he does that. Whatever he does, whatever you do, make sure you do not look at the bird when he does that, or else he will take that and he will do that again. It was very difficult advice to follow. Very difficult advice.
I would have to look at that bird if it shrieked at me.
If the bird shrieks at you, you're like, what the hell, man? What are you doing? And he's like, oh, look at that. I got your attention. There you go. All right. So, you know.
Can you imagine being the guy, though, jumps off, breaks his leg, immediately thinks he's going to run away from the security guards, and now he's like, please come help me.
That immediate pivot from, look at me, I'm going to avoid everybody, I'm a hero, to help, help. I need some help. Okay. Yeah, you can zip tie my wrists if you want. Do you have a cast? Do you have any painkillers at all? Yeah. The fact that they took him to the first aid room, I mean, that's generous. Good job, White Sox. Good job, White Sox staff, actually taking that guy to the first aid room. I might have just, at this point, you know what? We're not going to send you to jail. We're just going to take you outside. Just take him outside. Drop him outside the gates. There you go. Good luck. Enjoy your night. Thanks for coming by. And he's lying out there going, help. Matt is in Milwaukee on 670 The Score. Hi, Matt. How are you?
Hey, State. I saw the videos. I wasn't at the game or anything, but all I could think of is the best way I ever saw this getting handled. This has been, I don't know, 30 years ago. Randy Myers was the Cubs closer, and yes, some idiot came running on the field, and he just basically laid the guy out.
Yes.
You know, he tried to tackle him on the mound, and he just flipped him. This was like right after those that father and son duo had attacked the White Sox base coach. And he said, I didn't know, you know, they could have a knife, they could have a gun. I don't know. Why should I sit there and let myself be in danger?
Yeah.
And, you know, they can't do that now because they'll be afraid, you know, the players or the team will get sued. But, you know.
Yeah, they would. I mean, I absolutely remember that with Randy Myers here in town. There's a legendary video of Mike Curtis, a linebacker for the Baltimore Colts, clotheslining a fan who had the audacity to run onto the field. And you know, so yeah, moments like that, letting the players take care of it is a great idea. There's more text coming in. Show it, add music, compare them to clowns, make it a cautionary tale. Here's another one. Posting their mugshot is always a good idea. Here's another. Next guy to jump on the field at guaranteed rate should be punished by being named the White Sox manager for 2025. Oh, boy. More on the managers coming up at the top of the hour. Craig Counsell and the next White Sox manager. And we're going to talk to you folks about managers in the final hour of the show. This is Ken in Elk Grove Village on the Score. Hello, Ken. How are you?
Hey, what's the song that they play when the pitcher gets yanked out? The opposing team? Na 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 na.
Yep.
Na 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 na.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, hey, hey. Goodbye.
Yeah. Play that
it's
for
just
the
a good day to be a Cub fan, that's all.
Oh God. See, now that's mean spirited. That's mean spirited. Really? Really? Yeah, it's our town. Hey, you know what? It's Cubs and Sox weekend. You're supposed to do that. You're supposed to trash talk each other. If you want to trash talk each other, this is your time to do it. Hell, this is your show to do it. I embrace it. Because, I mean, it's a truism of where we are. This is when you lean into your meatball tendencies on a weekend like this. Love to hear some Sox fans ripping on the Cubs. Feel free. Feel free. Love to hear some Cub fans. See, letting Cub fans rip on the Sox, though, just feels like piling on. They're so miserable already. I mean, nobody is more miserable than the true hardcore White Sox fans I know. And they're miserable when the team's good. They just are. They just have this de facto level of miserableness, just kind of a resting state of miserableness that White Sox fandom is defined by. And now, it's completely off the charts. Don't even know what to do with themselves. This is Bill in Hinsdale on 670 The Score. Good morning, Bill. Thanks for holding. How are you?
Hey, Speak. How you doing?
I'm good.
Full disclosure, I'm a Cub fan, and I love Steve Stone, but I was at the game on Friday. There was 25,000 Cub fans there, so Steve knows deep down that he will not be doing radio or TV when the Sox are above 500, because it's 5 years coming. You know, the fact that they didn't trade Crochet, he looked like he was throwing batting practice on Friday night. And, you know, Louis Robert, I mean, come on. He's Reinsdorf's plan to give all these guys $40, $50 million up front. They can't spend that money in Venezuela. They're kings. They're set. And they're dogs. Moncada, Jimenez, and Robert. They're three dogs. And the guy who went on the field and tackled Randy Myers,
yeah,
he's the guy who came up with the sign, "It's going to happen." I actually know the guy, and he had about 20 beers in him that day, and Randy Myers would have put him in traction if he wanted to, you know? So,
wow.
Anyway.
Bill, you know the guy. Yeah. Is he still with us? Is that guy still with us?
John Murray, yeah. He's a 50-year-old Board of Trade guy. Great guy. You know?
Bill, can you please hang on? And would you give please hang on and talk to the associate producer 1 second. Associate producer, Ruben, please talk to Bill in Hinsdale and see if you can get contact information for his friend who did that. Okay, ask Bill if you can get a phone number or an email address. Thank you, sir. Talk to Bill. I want to talk to that guy. Sean, help Ruben get that contact information. Hell, maybe we'll do it today. I want to talk to that guy. What are you thinking? 20 beers in. What are you thinking? How does it work? 670 The Score is where you are. I asked for your phone calls, and if you're meatballs, I don't care. I'm fine with it. It's the weekend to do it. There's no game today. What are we doing? What are we doing with no game today? Sox wanted their Cubs-Sox games on the weekend. I get it. Got themselves some sellouts. Was Friday a sellout? Because I know Saturday was. I think Friday
was pretty close.
Friday was pretty damn close. Two great crowds, two great nights. So that means a Sunday day off. Here's the update. And I heard this on the radio broadcast last night from Len Casper and Darren Jackson as I was bouncing around a little bit. The last time the White Sox had a scheduled off day on a Sunday, September 26, 1954. 1954! I don't know when the Cubs one was, but 1954 was the last scheduled Sunday off day for the White Sox. And I heard Len Casper say this. Nelly Fox had a barbecue that day and hosted the entire team. I don't think that's true, but I like thinking that it's true.
I hope it's true.
Right? Doesn't it feel good? Everybody should be at Nicky Lopez's house. I hope everybody's at Nicky Lopez's house for a White Sox family barbecue today. And maybe they'll even invite Chris Getz. It's 670 The Score. Matt Spiegler with you on Hit and Run. Hear from the manager on one side of town and hear from the big boss about the manager on the other side of town at the top of the hour.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
You started last night, you got the win, and afterwards you said these games are always a little bit wacky, I believe was the quote that you used with the media after the game. And that's kind of been the story of this Crosstown Classic this year. Who's ever heard of three straight 7-6 ball games?
I've never heard of it. I do feel like just rivalry games in general and, you know, games where there's just some intensity from the crowd and both teams show up ready to go. It feels a little different. I've been lucky enough to play in some like Yankees Red Sox and Cubs Cardinals and now this, and it does just feel a little different.
Hap to right. Jolks is there, and there's one gone. Another fly ball out off the arm of Chris Flexen.
Jameson, what you have to understand is when both teams were good, this was the greatest thing going. I know everyone wanted to talk Red Sox, Yankees, or Dodgers, Giants, but I'm telling you, for the years I was here, when both teams were really good and were really trying, we used to play six games. Those six games meant more to the fans than pretty much anything else you did the entire season.
I've watched some of the reruns on Marquee. Well, I'll be like on the treadmill. They'll have them on and stuff. And they're pretty fun to watch.
Yeah, but see, those are the wrong ones to watch. See, you need to watch the other team's reruns.
Gotcha.
Great stuff with AJ Pruszynski and Kevin Kugler, who's a big Cubs fan. So Kugler and AJ, you got a Cub fan and a Sox fan working together. I don't know if Kugler goes public with that, but he's been on with Lawrence Holmes. I know he's friendly with Lawrence and others here at The Score. And Jameson Taillon in the dugout. That was great stuff. Good pull from Sean Sears. And yes, AJ, when both teams are good, there's nothing like it, man. I don't think there's anything like it in any town. Really, I mean, it's bigger and better than Mets Yankees. It is. I've lived near that. And there's good stuff there with Mets Yankees. They've met in a World Series. That's the only one that can come close. I mean, Giants A's, I guess they've met in a World Series too.
Yeah, series with a bang.
How about that? We need a Cubs Sox World Series.
I really
man.
Thought it was going to happen in the 2020s.
Oh, the target there, like the end of the White Sox rebuild should have coincided with the denouement of the Cubs window. It just denouemented a little too fast. And I don't know if I can make that a verb, but I just did. Jimmy's in Steger and is on The Score. What's up, Jimmy? Welcome in.
Good morning, Matt. Great show as usual. I missed the Steve Stone interview because of my job, but that's okay. I just wanted to make a comment. Actually, you just played what I was gonna, think I was going to go with a little bit.
Jimmy, Jimmy, try again. You're breaking up, but try again.
How's that, Matt? Is it better?
Yeah, keep going.
The Kugler-Pruszynski thing was fabulous. And even though I'm a Cub fan, I'm not a Sox, you know, hater because of my family. I have family and friends. A.J. Pruszynski needs to be manager of the White Sox. Nobody's going to blame him And that would be so much fun. Imagine Ozzie being his bench coach. I don't know if he will because of his family, but he'd be a great bench coach like Zimmer was to Joe Torre.
Huh.
You'd have the fire you need, Matt. I'm going to listen to your comments with everybody after this. Have a great day.
Thanks, Jimmy. Thanks for calling. AJ and Ozzy would be a hilariously entertaining combo platter to throw back in charge of the White Sox. Hilarious. They should have given Ozzy the job when they gave it to Grifol. Let Ozzy take a chance and see if he could motivate some of those dogs that we've been talking about. Because that thing was so broken, and Ozzy would have come in, known the team extremely well, and tried to fire them up. That Ozzy would have been a great last gasp of the window kind of flyer to take. That was the moment for Ozzy. This is not the moment for Ozzy. This thing is too far away. AJ, look, I'll say this. The magic blend as a person and communicator that a manager needs to have, account-a-likeability, I've called it, right? You got to hold people accountable and still be likable. Mark DeRosa said it like this. You need the ability to tell people the truth without them wanting to punch you in the face, okay? Everybody wants to punch AJ in the face. I don't believe that AJ has the likability as a communicator. He's very good doing media. Foul territory is a great thing. That is a different thing. Person to person, teammate to teammate, manager to player, there has to be a respectability and a likability. And I doubt that that exists with AJ. This is Peter in Lombard on the Score. Hello, Peter.
Hey, Matt. I just wanted to say I really appreciate your show and the way that you interact with the callers. That's really cool the way you do it. It's a beautiful day for baseball. I wish we were playing. But I'm a Sox fan, and I don't hate the Cubs. And in fact, I root for the Cubs if they're playing the Dodgers or if they're playing the Mets. I root for the Cubs. But I did make a bet as a Sox fan on the Cubs probably back in early May, and I got 8-1 odds that they'd win the division. So I'm rooting for the Cubs. Even if they don't win the division, I'm rooting for the Cubs to see if they can close well. And just wanted to let you know.
That the likes of Peter are out there letting us know that Peter is out there doing his thing. Amazing. Yeah, man, the advent of gambling has truly enabled the possibility of a Sox fan to be fully in bed and fully emotionally and financially invested as the season goes on. Got a great text from James, and James Fox, who said, here's the thing about Sox fans. We don't care about criticism because nobody hates the White Sox more than White Sox fans. Nobody. Another texter says this, man, I want to be Ruben, associate producer for the best baseball radio program in Chicago. Sign me up. Great work, young man. Did you hear that, Rubster? You hear that?
The thing is,
yeah,
it's not like concurrent pay. So I get paid on and off sometimes.
Oh, you're having an issue with
your $20 for 4 hours.
I wouldn't go public with your salary.
And in 3 hours.
Most ball players do have to have their salaries out there. I can find those on website. Your salary I wouldn't have gone public with necessarily. But concurrent, you mean, so it's not consistent? Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. So if the pay was more consistent, like if you got that $20 at the end of every show, would you feel better?
Yeah.
You'd feel better about it?
100%.
Okay. May I suggest an agent? Can I?
Sean, can you be my lawyer?
I am woefully underqualified. You do not want me negotiating that. I can't even negotiate my deal, man.
Oh, man.
You see what I'm working with here, people?
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, noted, young man. There's at least one texter who wishes he were you. To this texter, I would say Ruben has been asking to have an hour off of his 3-hour show all morning long. Can I have an hour off? No. 20 minutes later. Do you think I could have an hour off? No. No, you cannot. How about 30 minutes?
Can I have an hour off?
No, you can't, Sean. No, you cannot. I can't. Sometimes we grow up and we have to go to work even when we don't want to go to work. And that's the lesson I'm trying to teach this young man. Sometimes you don't want to go to work, but you have to go to work. And more work is what we'll do. Rami Makhlouf is going to be here at noon. He'll talk plenty of Bears with you, but also he was there last night. So more Cubs Sox talk will be continuing with Rami. So that'll be good stuff. I got another hour with you, the callers, and you'll hear from Craig Counsell and Chris Getz. And we got to do Team of the Moment still. All of that coming up on The Score.
The ability to tell somebody the truth without getting punched in the face.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
And he delivers with a single in the left. The throw coming home. Bad intended. Let's go. What a throw from left.
Doesn't get any better looking than this as Andrew Benintendi charging the ball aggressively, putting it right on the money and cutting down one of baseball's fastest runners.
Here's Benintendi at the dish, and he sends this one out to right. Going back is Suzuki at the wall, and Benintendi first in the field, now at the plate.
Well, Andrew makes one of the best throws of his career and then follows it up with a towering fly ball to right field that didn't come down. So now it's a two-run game as the Sox are battling their way back into this. And they got a big spark defensively from Corey Lee and Andrew Benintendi. And now Benintendi offensively gets them closer.
It is Hit and Run with you on a Sunday morning. Matt Spiegel talking about baseball in our unique two-team town. And there's really, there's nothing like Cubs and Sox. Good moment last night during the Fox broadcast, the national broadcast, as A.J. Pierzynski and Jameson Taillon were talking about Cubs and Sox. Maybe we'll bring that some of that to you a little bit later on. But, you know, A.J. was saying there's nothing like it when these two teams are good. And he's right. But even when the two teams are not good, and they're where they are in different spots, but still, you know, both under 500, Friday especially seemed to be absolutely electric. Let's ask our friend Steve Stone, who joins us right now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Steve, welcome in. How are you, sir?
Going pretty well this morning. Got a couple of days off. Yesterday was another tight game between these two teams. I was there for the Friday night game, and there was a certain amount of electricity around the ballpark, which I believe that the Sox and their fandom would love to get used to, but to do that, the team's got to get a bit better before you can look forward to crowds with that much energy and that plentiful.
I did think that Friday was a great baseball game. It felt like the Sox players were rising to the moment. It had like interesting energy with Grady Sizemore's first game, his first pitching change. He goes out to get his ace down 6-0. That's a tough hand you're dealt there. But they clawed all the way back, and I wonder, you know, there's some proud, so obviously some proud players who I felt like showed up real hard.
Well, I do believe that. When you're having the kind of year the Sox are having, you look for little victories here and there, and you get a chance to play a team that's either a great rival, a crosstown rival in this case, a divisional rival if they can hook up with the Guardians or the Twins going forward. I think you look at those as games you would love to bear down a little bit and win those games. You're not going to be able to salvage this particular year. You're sitting there at 28-91, realizing that at 41 games out, there's a real good chance you're not going to make the playoffs. So you look for other things to make your season. Certainly there's individual accomplishments, but more than that, an accomplishment as a team is beating teams you really enjoy beating, and you would have to say for the Sox, the Cubs fall into that category.
Can you clarify something from Friday? I think you did it on Twitter, but let's go ahead and do it for the listeners. Chris Getz did not have his back to you, right? I've been in that spot where a guy is in the middle and the camera angle makes it look like he's ignoring you. That was not the case, correct, Steve?
No, that wasn't the case. Chris and I get along very well. There was no slight intended. And it was just a question of it's a shot that's designed for two people can accommodate three people. But when that happens, usually the person in the middle, whoever that is, will have his back to the person to his right, which is usually me. So the first person you see is John, whoever we're interviewing is in the middle, and then there's me, and occasionally it comes up a situation like that. But no, there was no snub intended. Chris and I get along fine, and again, it was more a camera than anything else.
Steve, how would you advise Chris, you know, and maybe you've had a chance to directly, but how would you advise him in terms of, like, you know, the two or three most important things that he ought to be thinking about to help this organization turn the baseball part around?
Well, I think he started out doing a lot of good things, and that was bringing in more front office talent. And I think that's how this starts, because it's the people in the front office that are going to get you the players that you see on the field. And so I don't think it's a question of advising Chris, because I think he's been around baseball front offices long enough to understand exactly what you have to do. And I'm not in on those meetings and not privy to those, but if I were to look at it, some of the things that I would advise, and I think that some of the things that they've already addressed, number one, you have to sit back and figure out what you want White Sox baseball to be. And then you have to implement that throughout your system. So you start when you get a player into your system, when you draft a player or sign a player as a free agent or go outside this country to bring in talent to your organization. And then you figure out what you want White Sox baseball to look like. And from the time that this guy puts on a uniform in the White Sox organization, you are explaining to him how you want this system to work. Excuse me, how you want the system to work and exactly what you want to implement. And then you plan to implement this throughout the system so that there's one thing being taught from the time you start with the White Sox to the time you get to the major leagues. And I think we've seen something, Speaks, that I don't know if a lot of people are paying attention to exactly. When White Sox fans say to me, is there any hope for the future? I mean, what's going to happen with this team? How long do we have to languish in obscurity, as it were, before things start to look a little bit better? So let's look at the way you have to build things, and that's fundamentally through your minor league system. And a few years back, and I'm talking about preseason of 2022, this organization was rated 30th as far as talent is concerned in the minor leagues. And then just a short time later in 2023 preseason, they were 26th. This year, entering this season, they were 20th. And right now, from people that I talk to and looking at various rating systems, overall, the White Sox are considered eighth best in the major leagues, which is a very quick climb from the bottom of the barrel to the top 10. And I think that's where the hope lies. And that's where Project Birmingham came in, where you wanted to make things happen at AA. And guess what? Birmingham this year got to the playoffs. There's a lot more talent down there than there's been. And that's originally what Chris Getz decided to deal with. And he brought in Paul Janisch because of that. And that's one of the player development people that is going to help the Sox get stronger. And the only way to do it is through player development, because number one, it's cheaper, because you don't have to go out and buy very expensive free agents. You're developing your own. And I think what we're seeing for the Sox is the pitching has developed a little more quickly than the hitting, because I think when you look at some of the young arms and see what's happening, young arms in the major leagues, young arms in the minor leagues, you realize that there is an improvement. It's just not going to happen overnight.
Yeah, no, there is an improvement, and that is a great currency to have. And then you could theoretically deal from that strength. But yeah, so does there need to be a hire of somebody who is in charge of hitting, whether it's a director of hitting or a Brian Bannister for the hitters, that kind of thing?
No, you know, you bring up a good point. And you look at how it unfolded to this point, and you realize that when you start to make some radical changes and they happen in August, you're not going to be able to implement those changes as quickly as you would like. And so that's one of the reasons why Chris decided that he's not going to make that consequential hire. And the next hire, bear in mind, is Chris gets his first hire, which is consequential because most GMs get two hires. So you might want to make sure that first one is pretty good. The second one has to be excellent. The first one doesn't work out. But I think they're going to talk to a lot of people from a lot of different organizations and get a feel for exactly what they want. And this is the thing that has to happen first. Before you hire a manager, you have to figure out, if you're a front office guy, if you're Josh Barfield or Jin Wong or any of the assistants to the GM, or you're talking about player development people, and you bring up a good point with Bannister and with a hitting guy coming in. I think one of the guys they brought up from the minor leagues is a guy by the name of Mike Gellinger. And Gellinger, for years, has been in the White Sox organization, and he was the guy that Paul Konerko went to when he had a swing problem. And if Paul, who's as analytical a guy and as insightful a guy and as knowledgeable a guy about hitting as anybody I've ever talked to, when he endorses somebody, I got to figure they're pretty good. So I think that's one of the steps that the Sox are taking. And I think there's a number of others, but they're subtle changes. I mean, look, you go out, you're the Dodgers, you sign Ohtani. That's a radical $700 million change, and it's almost instantaneous. But that's not how this works, because there was one team that could have afforded him, the team that did. And the other teams have to go about building it the old-fashioned way, which is a sound foundation from their minor leagues building up to the occasional free agent acquisition in the major leagues.
Yeah, Mike Gellinger, the Palatine native at age 60, back to the big club. He was kind of the de facto assistant hitting coach to Greg Walker, and definitely a guy who was valued by Konerko and other members of that 2005 team. We're here with Steve Stone on 670 The Score. Stoney, what can you tell listeners or tell me about your future? You are one of the best ever to do what you do, and seemingly an annual finalist for the Ford Frick Award, and well deserved. And it's you know, you're someone who's been a very important part of a lot of Sox fans' lives, and they're wondering if they're going to be able to count on that as part of the booth and their Sox fan life next year and beyond.
Well, what I said was, at the time when I was asked directly about that, what I said was, you just don't want to make decisions before you really have to. But there's a couple things come into play. Number one, I still really love this game. And on a daily basis, you can be struggling. You can have the kind of year the Sox have had. And then all of a sudden, Friday night pops up. And you sit back, you look at the crowd. You look at the intensity of the fans of both sides of town. Now, we realize that that game meant a whole lot more for the Cubs than it did for the Sox and their fans. However, the Sox and their fans really get up for Cub games. And that game produced one of the best played games with some of the more interesting plays that I've seen. And it's those kind of moments that keep me coming back, because you're looking at artistry sometimes, you're looking at what appears to be Little League baseball at sometimes. When it all comes together and you see things happen like that play Benintendi throwing out Pete Crow Armstrong at the plate, it was exquisite. And the same thing with Corey Lee making a great throw on a pop time to second base to cut down a would-be base stealer. You see those things happen and you say, you know what, this is how the game should be played. Now let's see how we can go about having more games like that than games that we've seen a lot this year. So as far as me coming back, I'll make the decision later in the year. Again, I still love baseball. The White Sox personnel have intimated that they would like to have me back, so that certainly is a good portion of the equation. Because if that wasn't on the table, then quite obviously there wouldn't be any coming back. But I'll look at it and I'll see what happens going forward. But again, it's a beautiful game, and occasionally when you have those games like Friday night, when there's over 38,000 people in the ballpark, where there's electricity that was palpable, when you just can get involved in every little nuance of the game of baseball, which is very much like the game of chess. On the surface, it's rudimentary. And then you go down and you peel off the layers and you can see some of the most intricate strategy that you'd ever see in your life. And again, when it all comes together, it is beautiful. And so we'll see what happens as we move along in this year, and then I'll make my decision.
I mean, that's wonderful stuff. You know, I agree and feel you on the beauty of the game and how you never know which night you're going to get something wonderful. When it's well played. I have to ask how your partnership is going with John and how the booth is feeling, and if that is a factor in the way it all has felt, ups and downs this year.
Well, there's no doubt that if you were going to pick a time to try to assimilate into a new organization and represent a new city, a city you haven't been to before, and kind of make the transition from a national broadcast to a local broadcast, which is a completely different entity, by the way, this wouldn't be the year that John Schriffen would have picked to come into a new organization with a new city and see what's happening with the 28-91 Sox. But you don't get to pick and choose all the time exactly what is going to happen when you do make your decision. And I think John is adjusting to a new city in a very tough year for the ball club that he's calling. And I think he's made great strides from the beginning until now. And I look forward to working with him, certainly the rest of this year and on through. He has a multi-year contract, and I feel like he's going to be here. And I think, again, if he can make the improvement from this year to next, as he's made from the beginning of this season until now, I think he's going to be fine. It hasn't been smooth. It's been very difficult for a lot of different people in a lot of different areas, and John is one of those people.
It's an interesting role that you guys play. I was talking to somebody the other day who referred to the jobs that you guys have as, you know, faces of the organization, faces of the organization, because we hear from the manager a lot. But you guys are the ones kind of shepherding, and obviously the radio does too, but in terms of visually and just kind of the whole thing, you guys are the ones kind of shepherding people through a very awkward year. There's a lot of responsibility there, isn't there, in that role?
Well, yeah, certainly. You know, it helps to have a whole lot of experience when you go through something like this, and that's because you've seen a semblance of this year many times. I mean, with 55 years in professional baseball, as I have, I've seen a lot of really bad teams. I've seen a lot of really good teams. I played on some very bad teams and played on some very good teams. And so when you get this experience, although this is never pleasant, you realize that you can get through it. But the one thing that you have to bear in mind is people who tune in on a given day are tuning in to see a product that you're representing, and you owe them to give as much energy as you possibly can on a daily basis. And that means not going through the motions at any time. And look, during most of my professional career as a player, I wasn't good enough to go through the motions because I would have been washed out of the league. And I took the same type of aggressive attitude and enthusiasm when I went into the booth. And so knowing that I have a responsibility to our fans to give them the best product that I can give them on a daily basis, that's what you do. You go out there and realize that today's a brand new day. You don't have yesterday. You're not going to have tomorrow. You take care of today. And that's one of the things that I've learned over these years, is that man or woman or that young child, either male or female, when they're tuning in, they're tuning in to see the best I can give them. And, you know, as far as the players are concerned, most of these guys are giving you every ounce of what they have on a daily basis.
Stoney, you missed a decent game last night, but really you also missed two Jamokes jumping out of the outfield stands and ending up on the field with different results. We're going to talk about that with the listeners next and figure out what the hell those people were thinking. Maybe even invite them to call so they can be chastised on live radio. What the hell? But nice to talk to you, sir. Appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Speaks, have a good rest of the show, and we'll talk down the road.
All right, you got it. Steve Stone right there on 670 The Score. A texter says, Stoney has seen more bad baseball than anyone between the Cubs and all those bad years and the White Sox. Yeah, that's a lot of bad baseball that Steve has had to watch and talk through. But a lot of good baseball, too. It makes the good stuff that much more worthwhile. All right, I want to hear from you if you were at the game last night, or if you have now perused all the videos that are out there. Let's talk about those two Jamokes who jumped onto the field and did what they did with very different results. And what are we supposed to do with them? You know, we don't want to draw attention to it, because then they'll do it again, right? But I kind of want to draw attention to what happened to one of them. I really do. So we'll do that. And I want to hear from you who are at the game about that situation and anything else you want, Cubs and Sox. Phone lines back open for the rest of the hour and most of the rest of the show, as a matter of fact, at 312-644-6767.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
If this guy can't walk, they got to bring the card on to get him off the field.
So here comes the card with the medical attention to get the guy off the track, where he tried to go out and follow his buddy onto the field and run around, and instead he just hurt himself.
You know what's going on with that last inning with the, something going on in center field?
I think some fans maybe got a little overexcited. Yeah, maybe. That's what I think happened. Yeah.
Yeah, they got a little overexcited, Craig. It speaks with you on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. So I was on Fox TV on Channel 32, WFLD, last night with Tina Wen doing some post-game after Cubs and Sox. We did a lot of Caleb. Did a lot of Caleb Williams, folks. Because it was pretty damn exciting yesterday. Talk to you tomorrow about that. Rami Makhlouf will be here at noon. And Rami, I'm sure, will talk a bunch of Caleb. Bunch of Bears with you after Hit and Run. Rami was also there last night, and he sent out a tweet with the video from his perspective in the 500 section right behind the plate of one of the people that jumped out there. So anyway, I'm on set there in the ninth inning at Fox waiting to do TV, and the game is on, but there's no sound. I had no idea what was happening. PCA, like, steps in, and they go away. There's no game action. I see Hap comes over, and he's talking to Pete. I see Neris taking some warm-up pitches. I had no idea what was happening. I don't find out till later. Two fans jumped out. And if you you can see on Rami's video that one of them landed, ran around like crazy, and broke contain. Really impressive stuff. Had a little... a little Tariq Cohen in him as a returner, right? Like, he avoided a lot of people and deeks the security once, and then he goes over and he's there on the warning track, and he slows down. Everybody comes to get him, and then he takes off again. Really impressive stuff. Of course, he's on a baseball field with nowhere to go, so they eventually catch him. Do you see the guy two nights ago, by the way, who tried to jump over a wall and overestimated his vertical leap quite a bit? Just he did a full body plant.
It was more of a face plant.
Oh, my God. Full body plant against the outfield walls. It was amazing. And so you've got that. The second person, okay, the second person that jumped down, from the outfield onto the warning track and broke his leg. Immediately landed and broke his leg. And he was just like out there limping around. Is there anything more stupid and helpless than a complete and utter jamoke who has decided to go onto a baseball field for his brief 30 seconds of fame and breaks his leg and then needs help? They took the injury cart out there. They took the injury cart out there to get him. And as they were putting him on the cart, oh, your poor leg, they also zip-tied his arms together. Because screw you, pal. You're going to jail. You're going to the pokey. Yeah, you got a broken leg. We don't really care. I don't think that he had a very warm touch from the security people. I don't think they really, you know, worried too much about his comfort. Jesse Rogers tweeted that they wheeled the guy by Jesse, and apparently Sahadev Sharma as well, because Sahadev tweeted about it. They wheeled the guy by the media on their way to take him to the first aid room. The right leg was wrapped up. Jesse was guessing the 60-day injured list for the guy, that maybe he's going to be good for spring training. We don't know. But Sahadev said it was absolutely the funniest sight of the night. That the best and funniest sight of the night was Jesse asking this dude, WTF happened, as he's being wheeled by with his hands zip tied and his leg in an air cast. Just amazing visuals. Thank you to our media for doing God's work. I want to hear from you if you saw these idiots. If you saw these two idiots, I want to hear from you. What should we do to these people? Should I not even be talking about them? they don't show them. Is that the right thing to do? Jason Benetti had a moment the other night. Oh, yeah, it was his guy who did that, who jumped into the wall. Benetti was talking about him and absolutely blasted him. It was hilarious and entertaining because he's Benetti. But, like, should we – does it make sense to not show them? Does it make sense to talk about them? Should we not talk about them? I want them to be embarrassed. I've decided that they should be embarrassed. I think we should show them if they're getting their ass kicked. Maybe we should, as a television entity, as a television industry, roll tape on this, you know, somehow roll tape with one of your cameras. And then if they are suitably embarrassed or hurt or beaten down, then you do show that on the air. Just to remind people not to do this. Or is our everybody's a cameraman social media society getting the job done? I want to know what you think. 312-644-6767. This is Rick and Roselle on The Score. Good morning, Rick. How are you?
I am pretty good. How about yourself?
Very good. Thank you.
Well, I'm a 70-year-old baseball fan. I go to a lot of games both sides of town.
Okay.
And I've seen this before in person, and I really don't think you should talk about it because it encourages more people to do it. And these guys are selfish. They delayed the players. They delayed the fans, and they love the attention.
Mm-hmm. So we shouldn't show them and shouldn't talk about them at all. We should just pretend they don't exist, do that kind of thing?
Well, I guess you got to mention it a little bit, but I mean, it was so stupid. The guy jumps down and breaks his leg, and the other guy, I mean, it was funny. He was dodging those guys, but he was obviously younger than those security guys.
Yeah.
Well, it was kind of funny, but, you know, it's selfish. They delay everybody.
Yeah, no, absolutely they do. You know, I mentioned that the first guy had some Tariq Cohen in him as a returner. The second guy had some Tariq Cohen in him as he was getting hurt, And trying to, you know, return to the NFL. So they both had some Tariq Cohen in them, just different times of it. Yes, texture says he broke his leg. Ha ha, laughing on the floor. Ha, ha, ha. Another texture. You think these guys can be embarrassed? See, that's the thing. That's the thing. You can't fix stupid, says another texture. By all means, talk about them. The talking about them or showing them is, you know, they're going to stay stupid. There's another saying, no, don't talk about them. Don't. I think we have to. I think we have to talk about them. I think we have to show them, and we have to embarrass them. It's funny, all this talk about not paying attention reminds me, my brother used to have a parrot, had an African gray parrot named Spinoza, an absolutely beautiful bird. Those birds live a long time. The bird is still alive, as a matter of fact. Spinoza, I believe, is at the Lincoln Park Zoo. You know, the associate producer is looking at me. Yeah, Ruben, I think we should go visit Spinoza. If he's still alive, we should go see Spinoza. I used to be able to hang out with that bird, and he was awesome. Bird, like, learned to mimic the voicemail machine. It wasn't the answering machine. Listen to me. He learned to mimic the answering machine. Hello? Hello? You know, it was hilarious. And he learned to do all kinds of stuff. But every once in a while, he would let out an enormous shriek, just like the loudest, most horrifying shriek ever. And my instructions from my brother were to not look at the bird when he does that. Whatever he does, whatever you do, make sure you do not look at the bird when he does that, or else he will take that and he will do that again. It was very difficult advice to follow. Very difficult advice.
I would have to look at that bird if it shrieked at me.
If the bird shrieks at you, you're like, what the hell, man? What are you doing? And he's like, oh, look at that. I got your attention. There you go. All right. So, you know.
Can you imagine being the guy, though, jumps off, breaks his leg, immediately thinks he's going to run away from the security guards. Now he's like, please come help me.
That immediate pivot from, look at me, I'm going to avoid everybody, I'm a hero, to help, help. I need some help. Okay. Yeah, you can zip tie my wrists if you want. Do you have a cast? Do you have any painkillers at all? Yeah. The fact that they took him to the first aid room, I mean, that's generous. Good job, White Sox. Good job, White Sox staff, actually taking that guy to the first aid room. I might have just, at this point, you know what? We're not going to send you to jail. We're just going to take you outside. Just take him outside. Drop him outside the gates. There you go. Good luck. Enjoy your night. Thanks for coming by. And he's lying out there going, help. Matt is in Milwaukee on 670 The Score. Hi, Matt. How are you?
Hey, I saw the videos. I wasn't at the game or anything, but all I could think of is the best way I ever saw this getting handled. This has been, I don't know, 30 years ago. Randy Myers was the Cubs closer, and yes, some idiot came running on the field, and he just basically laid the guy out.
Yes.
You know, he tried to tackle him on the mound, and he just flipped him. This was like right after those that father and son duo had attacked the White Sox base coach. And he said, I didn't know, you know, they could have a knife, they could have a gun. I don't know. Why should I sit there and let myself be in danger?
Yeah.
And, you know, they can't do that now because they'll be afraid, you know, the players or the team will get sued. But, you know.
Yeah. They would. I mean, I absolutely remember that with Randy Myers here in town. There's a legendary video of Mike Curtis, a linebacker for the Baltimore Colts, clotheslining a fan who had the audacity to run onto the field. And you know, so yeah, moments like that, letting the players take care of it. Is a great idea. He's there's more text coming in. Show it. Add music. Compare them to clowns. Make it a cautionary tale. Here's another one. Posting their mugshot is always a good idea. Here's another. Next guy to jump on the field at guaranteed rate should be punished by being named the White Sox manager for 2025. Oh, boy. More on the managers coming up at the top of the hour. Craig Counsell and the next White Sox manager. And we're going to talk to you folks about managers in the final hour of the show. This is Ken in Elk Grove Village on The Score. Hello, Ken. How are you?
Hey, what's the song that they play when the pitcher gets yanked out? The opposing team? Na, 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 na.
Yep.
Na 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 na.
Mm-hmm.
Hey hey hey. Goodbye.
Yeah. Play that
it's
for
just
the
a good day to be a Cub fan. That's all.
Oh God. See, now that's mean spirited. That's mean spirited. Really? Really? Yeah, it's our town. Hey, you know what? It's Cubs and Sox weekend. You're supposed to do that. You're supposed to trash talk each other. If you want to trash talk each other, this is your time to do it. Hell, this is your show to do it. I embrace it because, I mean, it's a truism of where we are. This is when you lean into your meatball tendencies on a weekend like this. Love to hear some Sox fans ripping on the Cubs. Feel free. Feel free. Love to hear some Cub fans. See, letting Cub fans rip on the Sox, though, just feels like piling on. They're so miserable already. I mean, nobody is more miserable than the true hardcore White Sox fans I know. And they're miserable when the team's good. They just are. They just have this de facto level of miserableness, just kind of a resting state of miserableness that White Sox fandom is defined by. And now, it's completely off the charts. Don't even know what to do with themselves. This is Bill in Hinsdale on 670 The Score. Good morning, Bill. Thanks for holding. How are you?
Hey, Speaks. How you doing?
I'm good.
Full disclosure, I'm a Cub fan, and I love Steve Stone, but I was at the game on Friday. There was 25,000 Cub fans there. So Steve knows deep down that he will not be doing radio or TV when the Sox are above 500 because it's 5 years coming. You know, the fact that they didn't trade Crochet, he looked like he was throwing batting practice on Friday night. And, you know, Louis Robert, I mean, come on. He's Reinsdorf's plan to give all these guys $40, $50 million up front. They can't spend that money in Venezuela. They're kings. They're set. And they're dogs. Moncada, Jimenez, and Robert. They're three dogs. And the guy who went on the field and tackled Randy Myers,
yeah,
he's the guy who came up with the sign, it's going to happen. I actually know the guy, and he had about 20 beers in him that day. And Randy Myers would have put him in traction if he wanted to, you know. So
wow.
Anyway,
Bill, you know the guy. Is he still with us? Is that guy still with us?
John Murray, yeah, he's a 50-year-old board of trade guy, great guy. You know,
Bill, can you please hang on? And it, would you give, please hang on and talk to the associate producer one second. Associate producer, Ruben, please talk to Bill in Hinsdale and see if you can get contact information for his friend who did that. Okay. Ask Bill if you can get a phone number or an email address. Thank you, sir. Talk to Bill. I want to talk to that guy. Sean, help Ruben get that contact information. Hell, maybe we'll do it today. I want to talk to that guy. What are you thinking? 20 beers in. What are you thinking? How does it work? 670 The Score is where you are. I asked for your phone calls, and if you're meatballs, I don't care. I'm fine with it. It's the weekend to do it. There's no game today. What are we doing? What are we doing with no game today? Sox wanted their Cubs Sox games on the weekend. I get it. Got themselves some sellouts. Was Friday a sellout? Because I know Saturday was. I think Friday
was pretty close.
Friday was pretty damn close. Two great crowds, two great nights. So that means a Sunday day off. Here's the update. And I heard this on the radio broadcast last night from Len Casper and Darren Jackson as I was bouncing around a little bit. The last time the White Sox had a scheduled off day on a Sunday, September 26, 1954. 1954! I don't know when the Cubs one was. But 1954 was the last scheduled Sunday off day for the White Sox. And I heard Len Casper say this. Nellie Fox had a barbecue that day and hosted the entire team. I don't think that's true, but I like thinking that it's true.
I hope it's true.
Right? Doesn't it feel good? Everybody should be at Nicky Lopez's house. I hope everybody's at Nicky Lopez's house for a White Sox family barbecue today. And maybe they'll even invite Chris Getz. It's 670 The Score. Matt Spiegler with you on Hit and Run. Hear from the manager on one side of town and hear from the big boss about the manager on the other side of town at the top of the hour.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
You started last night, you got the win, and afterwards you said these games are always a little bit wacky, I believe was the quote that you used with the media after the game. And that's kind of been the story of this Crosstown Classic this year. Who's ever heard of three straight 7-6 ball games?
I've never heard of it. I do feel like just rivalry games in general and, you know, games where there's just some intensity from the crowd and both teams show up ready to go. It feels a little different. I've been lucky enough to play in some, like, Yankees Red Sox and Cubs Cardinals and now this, and it does just feel a little different.
Hap to right. Jolks is there, and there's one gone. Another fly ball out off the arm of Chris Flexen.
Jameson, what you have to understand is when both teams were good, this was the greatest thing going. I know everyone wanted to talk Red Sox, Yankees, or Dodgers, Giants, but I'm telling you, for the years I was here, when both teams were really good and were really trying, we used to play six games. Those six games meant more to the fans than pretty much anything else you did the entire season.
I've watched some of the reruns on Marquee while I'll be like on the treadmill. They'll have them on and stuff. They're pretty fun to watch.
Yeah, but see, those are the wrong ones to watch. See, you need to watch the other team's reruns.
Gotcha.
Great stuff with AJ Pruszynski and Kevin Kugler, who's a big Cubs fan. So Kugler and AJ, you got a Cub fan and a Sox fan working together. I don't know if Kugler goes public with that, but he's been on with Lawrence Holmes. I know he's friendly with Lawrence and others here at The Score. And Jameson Taillon in the dugout. That was great stuff. Good pull from Sean Sears. And yes, AJ, when both teams are good, there's nothing like it, man. I don't think there's anything like it in any town. Really, I mean, there's it's bigger and better than Mets Yankees. It is. I've lived near that. And there's good stuff there with Mets Yankees. They've met in a World Series. That's the only one that can come close. I mean, Giants A's. I guess they've met in a World Series, too.
Yeah, series with a bang.
How about that? We need a Cubs-Sox World Series.
I really
man.
Thought it was going to happen in the 2020s.
Oh, the target there. Like, the end of the White Sox rebuild should have coincided with the denouement of the Cubs window. It just denouement a little too fast. And I don't know if I can make that a verb, but I just did. Jimmy's in Steger and is on The Score. What's up, Jimmy? Welcome in.
Good morning, Matt. Great show as usual. I missed the Steve Stone interview because of my job, but that's okay. I just wanted to make a comment. Actually, you just played what I was gonna, think I was going to go with a little bit.
Jimmy, Jimmy, try again. You're breaking up, but try again.
How's that, Matt? Is it better?
Yeah, keep going.
Kugler-Pruszynski thing was fabulous. And even though I'm a Cub fan, I'm not a Sox you know, hater because of my family. I have family and friends. A.J. Pierzynski needs to be manager of the White Sox. Nobody's going to blame him, and that would be so much fun. Imagine Ozzy being his bench coach. I don't know if he will because of his family, but he'd be a great bench coach like Zimmer was to Joe Torre.
Huh.
You'd have the fire you need, Matt. I'm going to listen to your comments with everybody after this. Have a great day.
Thanks, Jimmy. Thanks for calling. AJ and Ozzy would be a hilariously entertaining combo platter to throw back in charge of the White Sox. Hilarious. They should have given Ozzy the job when they gave it to Grifol. Let Ozzy take a chance and see if he could motivate some of those dogs that we've been talking about. Because that thing was so broken, and Ozzy would have come in, known the team extremely well, and tried to fire them up. That Ozzy would have been a great last gasp of the window kind of flyer to take. That was the moment for Ozzy. This is not the moment for Ozzy. This thing is too far away. AJ, look, I'll say this. The magic blend as a person and communicator that a manager needs to have, accountable likability, I've called it, right? You got to hold people accountable and still be likable. Mark DeRosa said it like this. You need the ability to tell people the truth without them wanting to punch you in the face, okay? Everybody wants to punch AJ in the face. I don't believe that AJ has the likability as a communicator. He's very good doing media. Foul territory is a great thing. That is a different thing. Person to person, teammate to teammate, manager to player, there has to be a respectability and a likability. And I doubt that that exists with AJ. This is Peter in Lombard on the Score. Hello, Peter.
Hey, Matt. I just wanted to say I really appreciate your show and the way that you interact with the callers. That's really cool the way you do it. It's a beautiful day for baseball. I wish we were playing. But I'm a Sox fan, and I don't hate the Cubs. And in fact, I root for the Cubs if they're playing the Dodgers or if they're playing the Mets. I root for the Cubs. But I did make a bet as a Sox fan on the Cubs probably back in early May, and I got 8-1 odds that they'd win the division. So I'm rooting for the Cubs. Even if they don't win the division, I'm rooting for the Cubs to see if they can close well. And just wanted to let you know.
That the likes of Peter are out there letting us know that Peter is out there doing his thing. Amazing. Yeah, man, the advent of gambling has truly enabled the possibility of a Sox fan to be fully in bed and fully emotionally and financially invested as the season goes on. Got a great text from James, and James Fox, who said, here's the thing about Sox fans. We don't care about criticism because nobody hates the White Sox more than White Sox fans. Nobody. Another texter says this, man, I want to be Ruben, associate producer for the best baseball radio program in Chicago. Sign me up. Great work, young man. Did you hear that, Rubster? You hear that?
The thing is,
yeah,
it's not like concurrent pay. So I get paid on and off sometimes.
Oh, you're having an issue with your
$20 for 4 hours.
I wouldn't go public with your salary.
And or 3 hours.
Most ballplayers do have to have their salaries out there. I can find those on website. Your salary I wouldn't have gone public with necessarily. But concurrent, you mean, so it's not consistent? Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. So if the pay was more consistent, like if you got that $20 at the end of every show, would you feel better?
Yeah.
You'd feel better about it?
100%.
Okay. May I suggest an agent? Can I?
Sean, can you be my lawyer?
Sean, I am woefully underqualified. You do not want me negotiating that. I can't even negotiate my deal, man.
Oh, man.
You see what I'm working with here, people?
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, noted, young man. There's at least one texter who wishes he were you. To this texter, I would say Ruben has been asking to have an hour off of his 3-hour show all morning long. Can I have an hour off? No. 20 minutes later. Do you think I could have an hour off? No. No, you cannot. How about 30 minutes?
Can I have an hour off?
No, you can't, Sean. No, you cannot. I can't. Sometimes we grow up and we have to go to work even when we don't want to go to work. And that's the lesson I'm trying to teach this young man. Sometimes you don't want to go to work, but you have to go to work. And more work is what we'll do. Rami Makhlouf is going to be here at noon. He'll talk plenty of Bears with you, but also he was there last night. So more Cubs Sox talk will be continuing with Rami. So that'll be good stuff. I got another hour with you, the callers, and you'll hear from Craig Counsell and Chris Getz. And we got to do Team of the Moment still. All of that coming up on The Score.
The ability to tell somebody the truth without getting punched in the face.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.